From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a number, 89. What is so special about 89, you might ask? Is that a prime number? Is it something else? Well, 89 is the number of residents the New York State needed to count to avoid losing a congressional seat based on the most recent U.S. Census. Remember all those calls about filling out your census? Did you do it? Well, if elections have consequences, censuses have consequences too, and our state was 89 people short of keeping its current allotment of representatives, so we will lose one. And redistricting is happening, which is a process that can, if we're not careful, bore people who generally don't like to get very wonky. But it's important, and it will affect our lives in more ways than we think. And that's why we've asked our guest this hour to join us, give us a roadmap ahead for understanding redistricting, congressional apportionment, and what voice residents still might have in understanding all of this. And I will welcome our guest now. I know that Jennifer Wilson, Deputy Director of the League of Women Voters in New York State, filled out her census. Jennifer, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You did, didn't you?
Of course I did.
89 people, sure.
My friends do.
Oh, absolutely. Joseph Burgess did as well. Joseph is a data curator at the Roper Center for Public Opinion Research at Cornell University, representing only himself and his own views this hour, we should point out. Joseph, welcome back to the program.
Evan, thanks so much for having me on. Jennifer, nice to meet you. Excited for this discussion.
Well, it's nice to have both of you. And let me just start with sort of the broad view of this. You know, when the news came, Jennifer, that, you know, we were 89 people short of reaching that threshold to keep the current apportionment, what goes through your mind?
It was definitely bittersweet because on the one hand, we were so relieved that we had only lost one seat and we were initially thinking we'd lose two seats. But then to hear it was 89 people was very sad. But on the other hand, the groups that worked on getting out the count for the census, they worked so hard and we really were at risk of losing two. So to only lose one is not too bad. Not too bad.
Joseph, what did you think?
I felt very similarly. I really expected, as I think most experts did, that we were going to end up losing two seats. So it's bitter to lose one by 89 seats or 89 people is crazy. But it's nice to only lose one seat instead of two.
Well, and so let me ask both of you about this before we kind of look ahead here. I want to look back a little bit and talk about maybe narrative versus reality. You know, Jennifer, when you say that the expectation was we were going to lose two here, and we were very, very close to not even losing one, let me go ahead and just read an email I got leading into this program after we teased it this morning from a listener named Charles, who self-identifies as a more conservative person. And he says, I'd love to think that the loss of a congressional seat would force Albany to take a hard look at the policies that are forcing people to leave New York. It's not the weather, as the governor always claims, but our highest in the nation taxes, the lowest in the nation personal freedom, and the stranglehold New York City has over the rest of a very different state. But I know better. They'll just say it's Trump's fault and you're a racist and then find something else to spend my money on. That's from Charles. So like Charles sends this note saying, you know, hey, we're losing people. We're losing all these people. And we've talked about, quote, losing all these people. That was the narrative. We almost didn't lose any seats, not let alone two here. How do you see the narrative versus the reality of this, Jennifer?
Yeah, and I mean, I totally get everyone's frustration, especially, I live upstate too, so I get the upstate, downstate frustration, but the reality is that it's really the fact that New York State just underreports on their population. Pretty much every single census cycle, we underreport, and there's a lot of different reasons for that, whether it's hard to reach rural areas or hard to reach urban areas, but I think the overall narrative of people fleeing New York State is maybe not necessarily true.
Joseph, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's helpful to take a broader look at this apportionment process outside of New York. So New York did end up losing one seat. And if we're looking at the other states that lost seats, aside from California, there are states that are somewhat Republican controlled, they're split, and they're in the Midwest. And the congressional seats are going towards the Sun Belt. They're going to Texas, they're going to Florida, they're going to North Carolina as part of the New South. So that does suggest to me it's part of a broader migration pattern that may not necessarily have anything to do with our politics.
Okay, interesting. Listeners, as we talk about redistricting, apportionment, and much more this hour with our guests, if you have questions or comments on that, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. So Jennifer Wilson, as Deputy Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State, I know you've got a goal to get more people involved in redistricting. And I want to ask both of you to sort of lay out what we mean by what's happening here and kind of do, let's start with just an explainer on what's going on right now. And I'll start with Jennifer. Go ahead.
Sure. And your point at the top of the program of it getting very wonky and very boring is very well taken, because it is quite a wonky.
I don't think it's boring.
Process.
I've been told.
No, it is. But when you really start to kind of dig into how it's different this time around than it was 10 years ago, then I think there's a little bit of excitement. So in the past, our seated legislature, our state legislature, used to draw their own lines. And usually the congressional lines were drawn by a court because they didn't want to draw them, so they would hand it over to the court. But this year, for the first time ever in New York State, it is a commission that is drawing our lines. It is a 10-member commission. To be fair, it was appointed by the legislature, but there are two commissioners on there that are not affiliated with either of the major parties. They're equal representation on both sides of Democrats and Republicans. And this was written into our state constitution. So there are hard and fast rules this year about holding public hearings, about having transparency, and about having a process in place to make sure that we get these maps drawn and accepted on time.
So when it comes to those public hearings, I'm not cynical about this. I'm just trying to be realistic. There are times where public hearings mean actual public input and a public say, and there are public hearings that are window dressing about a preordained process. What are we dealing with here, Jennifer?
Sure, and I think this time around, the Constitution is really clear on this. There has to be 12 public hearings. They have to take place around the state. Rochester is one of the places where public hearings have to happen. And, you know, it is COVID, and the commission has said that they may hold these hearings virtually, but they will figure out a way to make sure there is proper representation of every part of New York State. And this is where the league is trying to come in and make sure that the public is prepared to put together testimonies, that they know how to use these free mapping software programs, and that they have kind of a general idea of what the problems are in their district in relation to gerrymandering that's happened in the past.
Joseph, what's the first piece of the explainer that you want people to understand?
Well, I thought it was funny that you said you didn't want to be cynical. I think I do want to be cynical.
Why?
So I think there's some really great steps that we've taken to make this process a little bit more transparent. But there are also steps that the state legislature will likely take to ultimately control the process to their own political ends. And I'm talking about specifically within New York here. And I think it's very likely that despite all of these kind of new good government efforts about transparency, that the legislature will ultimately reject whatever the commission decides and put in place their own maps to make things as democratic as possible.
So I want to put a point on this. What Joseph is saying is that, yes, there's this 10-person commission. Yes, it is designed to be transparent. But the lawmakers can overrule the commission. That is correct, Joseph?
Yes, they can.
And you expect them to?
I absolutely do. And not only that, I think they're actually moving to make the process of overruling that commission even easier.
Do they have to justify it, though? Yeah, sure, they can, but do they have to justify why they might overrule?
They don't. They can just do it. So ultimately, it's up to the legislature. They put a process in place where they have to have the commission. The commission has to present a map, and ultimately, they can choose to reject that map and draw their own. From what I'm hearing from my sources, I think it's extremely likely that they will ultimately do that, to draw their own maps for the state Senate, state assembly, and your congressional districts.
Jennifer, do you share Joseph's feeling that whatever this 10-person commission does, the legislature is just going to say, thanks for nothing, and we're going to do it our own way?
I mean, I hate to say I agree, but I kind of do. And Joseph raised an interesting point because you're right. There was a constitutional amendment put forward with literally no public input to amend the process as it's happening right now that's going to actually be on the ballot for voters to vote on. And to give the listener some context, the House and the Senate in New York State, as well as the governor, we have a super majority of Democrats. And this amendment that's being put forward is going to shift the voting structure for both the commission voting to approve the maps and the legislature, once they get their say, to take away any minority voting power. And when I say minority, I'm not just talking about Republicans. I'm talking about non-affiliated voters, Green Party voters, Libertarian voters, Working Family Party voters. That's how it's going to shift. And ultimately, you, the listeners as voters, will get to approve or disapprove this amendment in November.
Okay, so that's one way that people still have power, right?
Jennifer? Yes. And I I think Jennifer just explained it so beautifully and so perfect that the state legislature wants to make the process of their political override of the commission even easier. And I know this does get so wonky so quickly, but there will be that that referendum on the ballot this November. And that's one opportunity you have to kind of directly weigh in on this process, where you can say, no, I'd like to continue with the current format of the commission.
Okay. All right. So that's one possibility. Let me grab our first phone call. It's Lisa in Rochester. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hello. So I was wondering, when you were talking about the false narrative, and this impacts the question of, you know, where in the state we should be losing congressional seats, for example, you know, there's been some discussion that, you know, it's not fair for upstate to lose them because it's projected that some of the Republican districts will be combined. And I don't think it's helpful for any of us for it to be not competitive races. So there's not real challenges in a democracy. But I'm thinking that there may be a false narrative in saying that we're having for example, a youth brain drain. We bring a whole bunch of students into New York State, given the number of universities we have. And those aren't students who started here. They're students who come and then leave after their education to pursue options. We also have seniors leaving, which is a really big thing upstate, because their pensions, particularly government pensions, are not taxed in southern states that are coincidentally warmer. And you know, a change that affects that might affect the out-migration of some people, because we even have seniors coming back to New York State because the coverage for long-term care through Medicaid is much more generous in New York than it is, for example, in Florida.
A lot there, Lisa, and I appreciate the phone call. So let me start with Joseph Burgess, who is a data curator for a living here. Again, he's representing himself, not his employer at the Roper Center. But I want to not only let you respond to some of what Lisa said, but if you could you also, Joseph, address how you would look at the kind of data that says, okay, so New York went from 19.45 million or whatever the number was to 20 million and change. So there was actual overall population growth, but less growth than the average state, less growth than many other states that are growing more briskly. So to you, does that still indicate, I mean, how do we understand out-migration? How do we understand sort of the differences in growth rates? And then if you want to build on some of the other themes of the call, go ahead, Joseph.
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I'm really interested in issues of population growth and migration. And as I kind of hinted at before, I think we could see the relative population loss, so not absolute loss, but especially in upstate, we're not growing as quickly or we're losing population, as part of a broader pattern where the other states that are losing congressional districts, like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, had pretty similar climates, pretty similar economic histories of previously having a strong industrial base. So to some degree, I don't know if this can be solved or if this is something that's a problem we need to address immediately. I also think it's possible that in the long term, climate change could make upstate New York more desirable as sort of current population havens like Florida or Nevada grow less hospitable. So I think that's something over time where we might see those population changes shift. But I think they're natural to some degree. It's not necessarily always about the political or business climate or things that are directly under our control.
Okay, and what one follow-up before I turn to Jennifer for her thoughts. You know, Lisa on the phone is also asking, essentially, and I hope I'm interpreting her points correctly here, when we talk about losing a congressional seat, who stands to lose it? How do they make that decision? And who, and frankly, sort of who deserves to lose it in a state that has quite a diversity of population bases and territory? What do you think, Joseph?
That's a really fun question. And I think you can answer that two ways. And one is the sort of good government. Hey, what would it look like if we drew a fair map, if we put communities of interest together? And where would that align? Where would that lost seat come from? And I think the other question is, what will the New York State legislature do? And I think ultimately what they're going to do is that Congressman Tom Reed is not running again. So likely they will take his seat, which is based around the Ithaca area, and that'll be the seat that's ultimately lost and its population redistributed to the seats around it.
Jennifer, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's sort of the word on the street at the moment. But I do think it's important to note that the way districts are drawn, it's not sort of like a random free-for-all, we're just going to draw a district. There are rules about it. There's rules about population deviation. There's rules about splitting certain districts, making sure that districts are competitive, but also that they're not going to be drawn to specifically challenge the current incumbent. So there's a lot of rules there that are going to be part of this process, in addition to the obvious sort of elephant in the room that Tom Reed is retiring.
Sure. And Jennifer, on the subject of how those districts get drawn, I remember it must have been 2004 or five, where I was working in a different form of news media. No one's perfect. And, you know, was working on a story about congressional districts and the strange maps that we had. And the late Congresswoman Louise Slaughter was in a district at the time that is now known as sort of the earmuff district. It was part of the city of Rochester, then all along the border of right up against Lake Ontario, all the way to Buffalo, to the east side of Buffalo. And to me, it looked like a diseased banana. You could call it the barbells, the dumbbells, the earmuff district. And it, to me, it was ridiculous. So, you know, I'm this young reporter, you know, don't probably know much about the world. Maybe not much has changed, but I'm going, why is it like this? Well, if I remember the numbers, and I'm going back a ways, I think it was maybe 212,000 registered Democrats in that district and 90,000 registered Republicans, something like that. I mean, it was a massive, more than 2-to-1 registration advantage. And, you know, an older reporter said to me, that's how they draw these districts. Democrats get some, Republicans get some, and they build strongholds no matter what they look like or how ridiculous the geography. Again, that feels cynical, Jennifer, but is that how it gets done? And could the earmuff district come back? Is that stuff on the way back here?
Yeah, and that's something certainly we have local chapters throughout the state, and we've had conversations with our Buffalo and Rochester leagues about this and kind of how to prevent that going forward. And something that is part of the rules is compactness and contiguity, which basically compact, we want to make sure that districts don't look like that. And contiguity, we want to make sure that if we're drawing the district on a piece of paper, our pen is never going to lift up and go to a different spot.
Mm-hmm.
So these are things that we're definitely going to hope that the commission and the legislature take into consideration this time around, because we do have these rules. But it will be interesting to see how ultimately some of these upstate districts get redrawn.
Joseph, are you concerned about sort of the strange power flexes in the districts that come from them?
Yeah, I really wanted to expand on the idea of population variance and talk about the earmuff district a little bit.
Sure.
Which there are rumors, unfortunately, that the earmuff district might make a return. So Morelli's district, the one, if you're listening to this, you likely live in, which is most of Monroe County, because of how this redistricting process works, it needs to pick up about 60,000 more people. So no matter what, it has to change a little bit. And there's really two ways it could likely change. One, it could pick up the rest of Monroe County and then maybe a little of Ontario County, including Victor. And that's a pretty fair communities of interest based approach where you're, hey, These people live nearby. They have the similar economy. There's things going on to connect them. Or they could try and redistrict where, again, they bring back the earmuff district and go from basically Joe Morelli's house in Irondequoit and go all the way to Buffalo. I'm not quite sure which of these two they will do. Democrats really want to try and maximize their advantages and hopefully draw a 23-3 map, where it's 23 congressional Democrats and 3 congressional Republicans, as opposed to our current map, which is 19 Democrats and 8 Republicans. So they have a lot of tough choices if they want to try and maximize their partisan advantage.
Okay, and so let's talk to both of you about this. There inevitably will be listeners whose response to this is probably just like mine was when I first really dug into these kind of stories years ago, which is, doesn't that seem entirely undemocratic? Doesn't that seem, and this is not just exclusive to one party. This, both parties do this. Both parties especially do this when they have the power and the levers of power. In this state, the Democrats do. And I don't know what a fair way to do this looks like, but that doesn't sound like it, Joseph. Am I wrong?
You're absolutely correct. And I did want to bring a attention to the national picture to show why this is a bipartisan issue. So after this cycle of redistricting, Republicans will get to draw about 180 congressional seats. Well, Democrats will get to draw about 80 congressional seats or so. And both parties will be looking to maximize their advantages as much as possible in order to hopefully keep or win back the House. And this is also a problem on the state level as well. This is not a New York issue. Nothing here we're talking about is unique.
Yeah.
It's going on in every state, unless they've chosen to embrace some form of independent or bipartisan redistricting with some real teeth.
And again, the teeth would be can't be overruled by the legislature, can't be controlled by lawmakers in power, and those teeth do not exist in this state. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. One more question for Joseph, and then I'm very curious to hear Jennifer's take on all of this. But Joseph, is there an argument that, hey, listen, if you're the Democrats in power, this is your chance. The Republicans are going to do it too. And conversely, if you're in a state where Republicans have more power, this is your chance and the Democrats do it too. And if you don't do it, you know, you'd be like going into a boxing match going, you know, do we really need to be swinging at each other? And the other part side's going to knock you out. So you might as well fight. I mean, is there an argument for that? Or I guess is that the best outcome, or is a more transparent sort of system with teeth a better outcome, Joseph?
You know, I'm sympathetic to that argument, which I do, but it leads to an arms race, you know. Mm-hmm. And redistricting has gotten, I think, more partisan and more competitive every cycle to sort of gain the maximum advantage that each party can. I do think the only real solution is either the state-by-state reform solution, where people try and advocate for these more independent-based processes, or some form of national law, like the Democrats have proposed in H.R. 1, it's called, which, among many other things, would make partisan gerrymandering much more difficult.
Jennifer, what is the best system? What is the fairest system? What's the most democratic or best for the residents of New York?
Yeah, I mean, California has a pretty good system. They have a citizen-led redistricting commission that has some support from their state. I think not the attorney general, state, the Department of State gives them some support. But, you know, we got based on in 2014 when the amendment passed and the Senate had control or the Republicans had control of the Senate and the Democrats had control of the House. And it was sort of the compromise. And there are some protections in the proposal that we have. So technically, under the law right now, under the constitutional mandate, since we have two Democrat in each house having supermajority, technically, to get the maps approved, they need to have 60% of each house vote to approve the map. So that even though there's a supermajority, there would be some say from the minority party as well. And also in the voting structure of the commission itself, there needs to be at least one minority appointee that votes in favor of the map to kind of move them, to have the legislature vote on them. So there is some protections in the law, but the legislature has definitely not been great at supporting the commission. The funding got delayed for more than a year. They were even slow to appoint a commissioner in the first place. The commission still doesn't have funding. They still don't have a website. They still don't have staff, and the census data is coming out. So it definitely seems like there is an effort to undermine the system that we have in place in New York State.
So what would it take to get the real teeth that Joseph is talking about, Jennifer?
Unfortunately, I think we would probably have to redo our entire amendment, which, of course, having a constitutional amendment is quite a long process. So I don't think we can do anything in the immediate to have it happen this session. The League was supportive of this proposal at the time because it was the best case scenario versus the legislature just drawing their own maps and doing whatever they wanted anyway. But I think the best sort of example of a great system is what California has, a citizen-led redistricting commission instead.
Okay. David emails the program to say, Evan, how quaint. You want Democrats to play nice. Do you think Republicans play nice? Play nice and you lose every single time. That's from David. So I understand that. I mean, I understand the argument. You know, look at, you want to talk wonky politics, but look, for example, at the town of Perrington, where they have a town board, where there is a routine in Perrington where a town board member is not running for re-election, and you know, months before the election, resigns the seat or gets appointed somewhere else in town, and so the party in power, in that case Republicans, gets to put in a new person who, for a few months as a seat holder, happens to be, quote, an incumbent. And, oh, by the way, they're also the person who is running for that seat. So now they get the power of incumbency when they have an election in a few months. They do this time and time again, and it's legal. You're allowed to do it. It doesn't really look right to me. It looks really fishy, but it's legal. And David would probably argue, yep, Republicans are using the levers of power to hold power. And they should do that if they can, and Democrats should do that if they can. Jennifer, is there an argument for in your mind that supports that?
I don't think so. I can't imagine. At the end of the day, it's the voters who should be picking their elected officials, not elected officials picking their colleagues. That's not how it's supposed to work. But unfortunately, the reality is that this is how it works in a lot of places, and it's not exclusive to towns or villages. New York City has a huge problem with a similar situation of sort of seat switch. Flip-flopping since they have term limits for city council seats, so they'll just sort of trade seats every few years, and it's not ideal. It's not a great situation, and certainly redistricting is one of the ways to prevent things like that from happening and ensure that every single voter's vote counts equally and that there's no one district where a voter's counts more than someone in a different district. But yeah, it is it's not an ideal situation.
Joseph, what do you think?
Yeah, so I think it's really up to reformers to try and advocate either on a state-by-state basis or on a national basis to try and create these fair systems. And in most of the places where we do have these sort of real independent commissions, the way they've actually come about is that good government reformers and advocates have worked to place a referendum or a constitutional amendment on the ballot for voters to vote on directly. They're always very popular, and when they do make it onto the ballot, they often pass, and that voters don't want their, you know, even in very partisan states, they don't necessarily want these districts gerrymandered. They want a fair, a more fair system. So I think that's really the solution in states where it is easy to place a referendum on the ballot. I know reformers in Oklahoma, a bunch of other states are planning this for the upcoming cycle, to vote on a system of fair redistricting. So I think that's the solution, or we push for a nationwide ban on partisan gerrymandering. I don't think you can appeal to Democrats or Republicans' better instincts and say, hey, please don't do this. Yeah. So I think you really have to force them to behave.
Yeah, and that's why I actually don't think it's cynical, a lot of what Joseph has been saying. I think it's just realistic. Understanding, you know, I interviewed former House, what was Tom DeLay? House Speaker Tom DeLay from Texas talked to him years ago. He was pushing a book, and I asked him about gerrymandering because at the state level at Texas, he had been a master at this, and then, of course, brought it and really sort of enhanced the practice nationwide. And he just sat there incredulously with me, like, how dare you ask me about this? No, there's nothing wrong with what we did. Democrats do it, too, and it's the way of the world. Joseph is right. You're not going to get most people in political power to say, you know, this has just been the wrong way to do things. We shouldn't have districts that look like, you know, sort of like broken hammers. We should have actual, you know, thoughtful districts that are fair to voters and competitive where they might be. Not just rigged for parties' benefit. So you're probably not going to get that. And so in this state, the question is what comes next? And after we take our only break of the hour, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to ask our guests once again, if you missed it earlier, to let you know what they think that you can still do this year. If we're not going to have a process with teeth right now, what's on the ballot in November? What can happen? What do they still want you to know about this? And then if you've got questions about we've been talking a lot about congressional maps, but there are state maps, there's county maps, and I know listeners have had questions about that, and we'll hit that as well. Our guests include Jennifer Wilson, Deputy Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State, Joseph Burgess, Data Curator at the Roper Center for Public Opinion Research at Cornell University, and Joseph is representing only his own views, not his employer, on this program. We're going to take that break, and we'll come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Understanding Migraine. Kathy O'Shea is my guest. She's the author and editor of a new book called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. She has collected the writings of people, authors, well-known figures over time who suffered migraines and wrote about them. Oliver Sacks, Jane Austen, Virginia Woolf, so many more. And those stories will help everyone understand migraine next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Did you fill out your census? A lot of New Yorkers did, and there was concern before the final count that New York State was going to lose two congressional seats in a reapportionment. New York will lose one, not two, but if 89 more people had filled out their census, New York would have lost zero. So close, but we're losing one. And on that subject, here's Edward emailing the program. Edward says, Evan, it seems to me for members of the House of Representatives, loyalty to party comes before loyalty to their home state. Specifically, I'm thinking of Trump's repeal of the SALT deduction. It hurt a lot of New Yorkers. Representatives who supported this were choosing their party over their state. If New York State is going to lose a congressional seat to Texas or Florida, I'm fine with doing away with a New York district that is currently occupied by a representative who votes like he or she is representing the interests of Texas or Florida. That is from Edward. Jennifer Wilson, Deputy Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, we're a nonpartisan organization, so I don't want to get too much into the party politics. But I think this is a great point, though, because we're losing a seat and essentially we're losing power for New York State. So when your representative is going to go to vote on certain things, we hope they're going to vote in their constituency's best interest. But now, as the state of New York as a whole, we have less power than we did before. We have less voter power. Each person individually in New York State technically has less power in Congress than they did 10 years ago now.
Yeah, Joseph, is SALT a fair litmus test to you to determine whether a congressional representative is more interested in party versus state?
Well, I think it's funny when he was proposing that that Congress people are more interested in their party than the direct interests of their state. And I was like, yes, that's right. So that's where we are, unfortunately. You know, and I think if that's important to you as an issue, then that's something as a voter you should vote on. It's not particularly important to me. But I think it is something where it has this interesting partisan divide about raising taxes, about equality, and about these sort of blue state, red state issues. And so it's definitely a fascinating issue.
Roger writes to say, Evan, modern politics are a blood sport. Everyone has a team and feels that anything goes if your team wins. Power is the trophy and good governance suffers. That's from Roger. Brian writes to say, does this mean we are losing an electoral vote? Jennifer Wilson, a presidential electoral vote.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's an easy one. So to Brian's question. I just wanted to mention one point here. There was, if you go back to November, and I know there's some dark times and no one wants to remember the week of the election that seemed to go forever, but go back, and if you remember maybe the day after, 24 hours after the election, November 4th, November 5th, there was a time, it might have been maybe just in the 12 to 24 hours, but there was a time where it was a plausible scenario that Biden and Trump were going to have 269, 269. I mean, it was not crazy at all. Georgia could have gone the other way. I mean, there's a couple of things that had to happen, and it could have gotten there. And it wasn't like something weird, you know, like Biden winning Indiana or Trump winning California. It was definitely plausible. Now imagine that, but imagine New York State has one fewer electoral vote. Whoops. Wish you would have filled out the census, unless you're a Trump voter, in which you're very happy that people did not, because that's how much on a knife's edge modern presidential races have been. Former New York State Assembly member Mark Johns is on the line with us now. Hi, Mark. Thanks for making the time. How are you?
Thanks, Evan. Listen, I didn't catch the early part of the show, but I think your guest brought up the fact that we did vote on redistricting back in 2014. But none of the plans were good. I was down there. I had to be voted on by two different legislatures and then go to the public. All of a sudden, now we have one-party rule, and when that suddenly happens, we have a new redistricting plan, which is worse than the previous one. So, number one, I would tell people when you vote this year, no matter how you're voting, flip the ballot over and vote against it, because this is not independent redistricting. Number two, we need independent redistricting, and this is a Democrat state. And remember, H.R. 1, the House of Representatives 1, their first bill dealt with election reform, and one of the main tenets in that bill was independent redistricting. So why would the Democrats in New York State vote for a gerrymandered product when the Democrats in Washington are telling us they're for independent redistricting? And, you know, redistricting is the most important thing out there. I mean, you take a look at these districts. They look like a jigsaw puzzle. They're done for one reason. And at least the public can say, look, I'm not going to allow this to happen. I'm voting no. But it's not independent redistricting, and that's what we need, because then people like me that are more in the middle, not the extremes, will wind up representing districts, and hopefully the districts are not going to be extremes. Because right now, that's really all you have. And if you want to put something popular on the ballot, why don't they put the 12-year term limit bill on the ballot? They don't do that, right? But they allow gerrymandering of districts while saying the whole time, well, we really don't want that. Well, okay, then why are you proposing legislation or a constitutional amendment that puts it into law?
Mm. Mark, thank you. Jennifer Wilson from the League of Women Voters in New York State, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree. We're planning to launch a campaign in opposition to that constitutional amendment. And voters, just for general FYI, there's actually potentially going to be 5 ballot referendums this year. So definitely a good year to vote. In addition to being local elections this year, you will have the opportunity to vote on 5 ballot referendums this year.
Joseph Burgess?
It's right on all that. I think there's a real hypocrisy when you are fighting nationally to outlaw something, but, you know, on the state level, you're working to gerrymander and redraw your districts. I did want to point out that the New York Republicans have not been historically innocent when it comes to redistricting, especially after the 2010 process, where they even added a new state Senate seat. Literally created, you know, it was at 62 or whatever, now it's at 63, to help ensure control of the chamber. So no one is innocent here, and it's not interesting to me about questions of which politicians are ethical on this. I just think we need to reform it.
Okay, fair enough. So let's look ahead here, and Jennifer Wilson, for people who might have missed the opening part of this conversation, the League of Women Voters is engaged in a number of efforts in regards to helping the public understand these issues and maybe understand what their options are. What do you most want people to know and to do about this?
Yeah, so we have created a redistricting landing page website, super easy URL, nyredistricting.org.
Do it again. Do it again.
Okay.
website again.
nyredistricting.org.
Okay.
And on that website, we have all kinds of different resources, information about everything we're talking about in this program, as well as links to free mapping resources if you want to draw your own map. And we are doing a number of different public outreach campaigns. Just yesterday, we had a people's hearing where we invited organizations from across the state to talk about their concerns about redistricting. We have the archive video up there. We also have had different public trainings, education about what this process is, basically everything we talked about in this program, all available there. And in the coming weeks, we're also going to have a training for the public on how to write and deliver public testimony, so that when these hearings start happening, the public will know exactly how they can participate in the process and be able to do it in a really meaningful way.
It's all at nyredistricting.org.
Yeah.
I want to draw my own maps. I absolutely want to draw some maps here. As much as I would love to, like, draw maps that look like migraine aura and, like, weird, what is the main goal of letting people do that, Jennifer?
Yeah, and there's lots of different free software that's available. There's software like Dave's redistricting app that's really deep and detailed and very analytical. And then there's programs like Representable that are more about drawing your community of interest. That is essentially a Google map overlaid with census blocks. So you can literally click your community of interest. You can see your school. You can see your road. You can see your office. You can see everything. And you can click through and create your own community map and submit that to the commission. So there's lots of different ways to do this. There's lots of different options. And you definitely don't have to be a mathematician. You don't have to be a map maker. This software is really easy to use. And the links to all these different free programs are on our website.
Joseph, what do you want people thinking about, you know, in terms of their own options this year?
Yeah, I would say the number one thing you can do that would have a practical effect on this is to call your own state assembly member and your state senator. Especially, I think, if you're concerned about what the state assembly and state senate maps would ultimately look like, which we haven't gotten too much into. But there's some real concerns about fairness, about equity, about the way Rochester will ultimately be divided into different districts, that I think if you have strong opinions about these things, about fair maps, about representation, that I would call them and let them know. They may not be able ultimately to shift the tide by themselves, but I think it's worth calling.
John emails the program to say, if lawmakers can overrule this commission, why can't we overrule the legislature? In a sense, you can with your votes, I guess. But Jennifer Wilson, I don't. How would you answer John's question? And Jennifer, you might be on mute.
Sorry. This is kind of the whole point of redistricting, is that if we had fair districts, we could vote these people who aren't representing our interests out of office. But the way our state is gerrymandered, your vote might not count that much compared to your neighbor's vote down the street. So, yes, the idea of voting them, the legislators who aren't suiting your issue needs, out of office is great, but redistricting is really where it all starts. So I don't know if there's a way to necessarily do that, but that's where it starts, with redistricting.
Sorry, John. I know that's sort of frustrating to hear that. But yeah, if the legislature overrules this 10-person commission that is ostensibly going to be independent, transparent, et cetera, then yes, that they can probably do that. And it sounds like our guests think they probably will do that. And so on the subject of redistricting at different levels, Joseph, what would you sort of want people to know about thinking about how, you know, what district they're in on every level? We often think about Congress. We think about these national races. We think about the earmuff districts. But New York State has its own districts. The counties have their own districts. What do you want people to know about that?
Definitely. And I'll try and answer that not too detailed, but so I don't take up the rest of the hour. But for state legislature, I think the main thing is that Democrats, as always, want to maximize their partisan advantage. So I think they're going to try and draw two state Senate seats, most likely in the area, one with part of Rochester, the other with the other part of Rochester. Right now, Rochester is split into three, so this seems like a better and more equitable way to do it. I think that's the most likely scenario in the state Senate. In the state assembly, I think there's right now there's four Democratic assembly members in the area. I don't know if there will be after redistricting. I think it's going to be very, very tough to draw four Democratic seats. So they may try and use Rochester, the city itself, which has a lot of Democratic voters, and draw it in some very strange ways to maybe support multiple assembly members. It's not quite clear what those maps will look like at this time. So I would encourage people to call their representatives and urge fair redistricting. You know, call today. Call after this show. Why not?
Urge fair redistricting. Are you concerned about what county maps look like, Joseph?
Yeah, I mean, it's this one is kind of easier because they're definitely going to gerrymander, and I think it's the map is already gerrymandered, so I don't think it's going to look too different than it currently does. I think parts of the city, sort of around Park Ave and South Wedge, might extend into the suburbs a little bit. But because the map is already gerrymandered, I wouldn't expect them to be making major changes. You do actually still have an opportunity to affect that, and that they won't be redistricting until 2022 into 2023. So the legislators that you vote on this year will be the ones to ultimately draw the county ledge maps. So I would encourage you to vote for legislators who are willing to commit to a fair and independent process.
Okay. Dave writes to say, Evan, is the politicization of the census under the previous administration sufficient grounds to sue over apportionment? Jennifer Wilson?
I mean, I know I've heard that the governor is asking the attorney general to investigate some of the census data and see if we can appeal the census data. I don't know if it's grounds to sue on that, but I thought of something as Joseph was talking from the previous caller's question that even though there might not be a way to sort of usurp the process right now, there is the potential for litigation after the maps come out. There's potential for outside organizations to sue the legislature, to sue the commission if they aren't satisfied with the results. But not just that, if the results seem as if they are not following these new rules. So yes, legal challenges can happen. I don't necessarily know about the propaganda, but there is always, I feel like, the opportunity for a legal challenge.
Well, you know, lawyers are good at finding ways to get themselves in the courtrooms, and I say that as the son of a lawyer. I can say that. But, Joseph, do you expect any sort of legal remedy to any of this?
Yes, I'm really glad we got into this because I wanted to talk about it. So just looking at the North Carolina congressional map to jump around a little bit, they had a lawsuit over their congressional map going into the 2020 cycle. So a old map had been in place for, you know, years and years before it was successfully sued. And these, basically every state, I think, or many of the states are going to face lawsuits over their redistricting processes, either in state or federal courts. I don't expect those to necessarily be successful in New York State, but I do think we'll see that in some other states, especially in places where maybe Democrats have control over a state Supreme Court, but Republicans control the legislature. So you're going to see in the next 10 years or so a lot of lawsuits, a lot of news about lawsuits kind of going into that process.
But you think these lawsuits aren't just sort of frivolous? They could go somewhere.
Not necessarily in New York State, but, yeah, you know, in other states. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania recently had their congressional map in the last two cycles, had that overthrown. North Carolina did. A couple other states as well. I expect probably a lawsuit in Alabama for the upcoming cycle, as well as some other states. So definitely in some states, they will ultimately be successful and force a more fair or at least a different map.
Okay, I'll close with an email from Marie, who says, Evan, this has been really dispiriting. Does anybody want this to be a transparent and fair process? And I think she means anybody in politics, because I do, and Joseph does, and Jennifer does. I think Marie means anybody in politics. Jennifer Wilson, do you think anybody, to answer the question from the listener, wants this to be a transparent and fair process?
I mean, I don't know if I can point to a certain elected or appointed official, but I will say, as pessimistic as this whole conversation has been, I want people to leave with sort of the excitement that this is happening and that there is supposed to be this opportunity for public input. And don't feel so pessimistic that it seems like the legislature is trying to control everything and take away the power and undermine the commission and all of that. Take away that there is all these resources out there for you to use, for you to draft your own maps, for you to work with people in your community to put forward maps that better represent the people who live there, and be excited about that. Don't be sad. Be excited.
NYredistricting.org to do all of that, and they've really tried to collate, you know, give you a chance to understand, to learn, and then to empower. And there's still time to do it, nyredistricting.org. Joseph, do you think anybody in this process wants this to be fair and transparent?
Well, I'll use one example that gives me a little hope.
30 seconds, go ahead.
Yes, in Virginia, Democrats recently took control of the state government for the first time and passed a more bipartisan independent redistricting, limiting their own power. So I do think you should call your legislators and urge them for a better process.
Joseph Burgess is the data curator at the Roper Center for Public Opinion Research at Cornell, speaking on his own behalf, not his employer, this hour. We appreciate it, Joseph, and we hope we can come back sometime soon. I know there's this and a lot more to discuss. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
Jennifer Wilson, Deputy Director of the League of Women Voters of New York State, and one more time, it's nyredistricting.org. Sometimes it feels like an uphill fight, I'm sure, Jennifer, but I know that the citizens of New York appreciate this nonpartisan effort. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
We hope you'll come back here and keep us apprised of this. Learned a lot this hour, and we've got more connections straight ahead.